You like Fireboy? I do.
You're listening to Your Tables on Fire, a weekly conversation with the hottest game designers on Kickstarter. Here comes your host, Jeff Beck.
Well, hello there. Thanks for tuning in to Your Tables on Fire. This is episode number 52. All right. With me today, we have a special guest. In fact, we have two special guests. One of the special guests is a famous game designer, and one of the special guests, perhaps equally as famous, but not a game designer, but instead our guest host, Sam Aho. Sam, welcome to Your Tables on Fire.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
I'm glad you're here taking over, because I'm switching gears as the co-designer of the game we're here to talk about. But before we get to that, let's introduce the other person on the line. Welcome, Tim Fowers.
Hey, what's up, guys?
All right, Sam, I'm turning it over to you.
All right.
Rock it away.
Thanks for having me on here. I appreciate the nod to saying that I'm as famous as Tim, instead of just going with the unknown Sam from Sam Says Game Reviews. I appreciate that. That means a lot to me.
Well, I'm trying to butter you up as the host,
Exactly. So we're here just because you're the normal host of this podcast. Don't think that I'm going to take it easy on you.
Purses!
I'm going to ask you and Tim some tough questions, and we're going to get down and get some answers from you guys. Really focusing on game design.
I'm sweating already.
And he's driving the car now, okay?
I'm driving the car, Jeff.
And it's going off a cliff.
Thelma and Louise style. So Jeff, obviously we know a little bit about you, where you are the host of the podcast, but Tim, why don't you introduce yourself, kind of talk about the games that you've done in the past, and just let some of the listeners know a little bit more about you.
Yeah, Tim Fowers, I came kind of from video games. I made some different video games in the past, worked for Amazon as a game designer, probably most known for Paperback and Burgle Bros, and my newest game, Fugitive. Those are the three games I kind of have out, and all have been well-received. All have done pretty well.
Great. And Jeff, just in case this is somebody's first time listening in, tell us a little bit about the games you've designed, a little bit about you.
Sure. Yeah, so Jeff Beck, if this is your first time listening, I'm normally the host, so that's why that's awkward.
Sure. But Jeff, we're not talking about that.
I also designed a game last year called Word Domination. It was a word area control game. It was on Kickstarter in August.
And when will that be delivering to backers?
Well, funny you should ask. I just was in touch with the manufacturer just this morning, who said it's done. So we're loading it up on the boat. So it's going to make that long, slow journey across the sea here right away.
Well, that's awesome. That is good news, especially if your backers are listening and they haven't gotten a Kickstarter update yet.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm one of those backers, so so that's good to know. All right, so let's get into it. Jeff, kind of tell me a little bit about what got you into game design. What made you think of, I want to design a game, or just tell us a little bit about that.
Well, sure, yeah, I'll start, and then we can pass it over to Tim.
Oh, no one cares about Tim. It's fine.
That's true.
I'm sorry. That was mean.
Still true, though.
Crying.
I got into game design just by happenstance, right? Because my first introduction, and probably I think that's true. This is true for a lot of people. Is I got into game design because of house rules, right? Because I had a number of just miserable games on my shelf. I had a number of small children, and as is normal, I would head out to the Wally World, I would pick up a copy of, say, Candyland, I'd break that out for my kids, and it was just such a miserable experience.
I don't know what problem you have with Candyland. Candyland is an excellent game.
I'm sorry if the designer of Candyland is a listener of this podcast, because he's no longer a listener, but it's miserable. It's pre-programmed from the very beginning, who's the winner. It's not even really a game. I don't know what you would call it, because it's hardly an activity either.
It's an exercise. It's an exercise in futility.
It's an exercise in pain management. I think is the right way to put it.
You're learning about free choice or the illusion of choice.
That's right. So my very first experience with game design was taking that game, recrafting it, and trying to come up with something that at least had a semblance of choice. And I called that game Candy World. And that's by no question going to be my third Kickstarter. So just watch out for that. It's coming soon. You know, as soon as I can wrestle the rights off of Hasbro, that's coming.
Perfect. Candyland Reimagined by Jeff Beck.
It's going to be a huge hit. Just huge.
I will be the first to pass over that on Kickstarter.
As will I.
And so, Tim, you mentioned you started in kind of video games and doing that. What forced you to cross over to board games, and what got you into that?
I mean, my love for both kind of started at the same time. I was exposed to Settlers, Puerto Rico, and Power Grid in like 06. And I was just amazed at how elegant they were. That kind of actually drove me to go make video games, because I thought that was kind of the only outlet for like game design as a job. And I had a whole adventure over making independent games and making video games. But my heart was always kind of in board games. I was kind of doing board gamey video games and whatnot. And, you know, kind of while I was on that adventure, my friend who is a programmer is busy working on features and whatnot. And I had some free time, and I'm like, well, I guess I could spin up, you know, kind of a board game. And I'd, you know, at that point I'd kept up with a lot of the Euros and Board Game Geek and whatnot. I just started making a game. So I made Walkstar, which started as a zombie, you know, Left 4 Dead kind of game. And I pivoted it into a Chinese restaurant game.
Naturally.
Yeah, it's a natural transition. And the rest is kind of history. I mean, I kind of got, you know, I got a whole history of getting pushed around by a bunch of publishers and then kind of finding my own business model. And now I do this full time. So long story short.
Awesome. So Jeff, let's go back. Your previous game that is, as we've just found out, is finished production. Yes. Was a word game, Word Domination, and then the new game that's coming out that you designed is Hardback, which is also a word game. So what's the deal? What's up with the word games? I mean, it's not a huge section of the gaming market. You know, word games are great. It's just they're not common. So what made you get into word games?
You know, I'm pretty sure I had a fifth grade teacher who cursed me, you know, because I was a terrible speller, and she's like, someday this will be your life. I'm pretty sure that's how it happened. No, I mean, the reality is I actually find word games pretty fascinating. Obviously, I've done two of them now. And the reason for that is because any good game really boils down to the interesting decisions you make, right? And then what constraints are on those decisions. And anytime you have to spell a word, that's a fantastic constraint. What it's not is an interesting decision. It's a terrible decision to make because it's, can you spell a word or can you not spell a word? That's boring. But if you layer on interesting decisions with the constraint of spelling, that actually gets pretty interesting pretty quick.
Yeah, and you got to which ones. We found some things that like really collided with word building when it came to creating a choice.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, you can't mix anything. My candy speller game is not going to be successful, sadly enough.
All right. So what is the single worst gaming experience you've had, minus Candyland, because we have heard about Candyland?
I was at Protospiel, so I went with Walkstar. I went up to Michigan and went to Protospiel in 09. I played this farming game. It was sobering. You had to, you know, it was realistic in the sense that you had to go into debt to buy the equipment that you needed to finish your farm, and then you go further in debt, and you won by just getting out of debt. And it was super depressing.
So like, this is like, life then.
Yeah, it sounds pretty realistic.
I couldn't finish it. It was soul crushing. And mechanically it was, you know, bad and whatnot. But like when it comes to like a game fulfilling a fantasy, yeah, man, that one stung.
That is not the fantasy that a lot of people have.
Yeah, man.
Well, getting out of debt, yes, but
nope. Yeah, and oftentimes you just spiral down. It was bad.
All right. When you have an idea for a game and you've thought about it enough, you think this could be a reality. What are your first steps? You know, steps one and two that you'll do with, you know, every game, regardless of what genre or type or theme or mechanical wise. what is it you do? Do you talk to a certain person? Do you flesh things out? I mean, what do you do to work on that?
Well, I mean, usually I go to Michael's and get craft supplies.
Well, yeah, you need to crochet your ideas first, right? No,
dude, yeah, man. Talk to those grandmas. They'll teach you all kinds of hacks on how to make stuff. Make my own dice or pieces or cards. Man, like, I need beads for stuff. I've made so many trips there.
Yeah, I mean, along those lines, one thing I've learned very quickly is that what seems like a great idea in my head is not a great idea in reality, right? And you have to make it real to see the flaws. Because if you just leave it in your head and you let it roll around in there and it's getting more and more grand, and, you know, I'm starting to just envision myself accepting the Spill of Jars award, that's where it's going to fail, right? And so the sooner I get it out on the table and in front of someone else and I can see that, oh my gosh, actually throwing dice at other people's face is not as fun as I thought it was. Too bad.
Oh no, that is fun. Yeah, that is very fun. I do that every time I play a game. One more question before we move on. At what point do you know that it is time to stop? To put the game away, that, you know, this it isn't flushed out enough, it's not a great, it's just not going to work. How do you know when you get to that point? Because I think a lot of people need to know when they do need to stop, because it's not going to work and they need to start fresh.
A lot of it is, like, emotionally, it's hard to manage that kind of stuff, especially when you're having your first few ideas, because people are really protective of their first few game ideas. But instead of seeing it as this game is dead, you need to look at, like, okay, what was my goal, right? What was my goal with that experience? And the mechanics aren't getting me there right now. So I have an open loop. I have an unknown. I don't know the answer to this question. I see it as, like, a design as a question. How do I create this experience? And if I don't know the answer, it just goes on the back burner. That's how I see my things. It's like, it just needs more time in the back burner. I need to have more life experience, have more design experience. I need to get inspiration from other games and other people. And sometimes I'll circle back, and sometimes I'll just open that drawer again, pull it back out, and with a, you know, fresh set of eyes, like a year later, like the Warcraft game I've been putzing with, I pulled it back after 5 years, and I'm like, oh yeah, I've got the tools for this. I can fix this.
Excellent. Jeff, do you have anything to add to that?
One thing I would add is, one thing you can't look for is playtester feedback, in a way, at least not the words they say. Because in my experience, when you playtest a game, people are super nice, right? And so they just want to be positive. And so, like, they'll say, oh, that was a great game. That was super fun. And so if you just listen to those words, you may never put that game on the shelf, and that's going to be to your detriment. So instead, you need to look at their body language and ask the hard questions of yourself. Like, are they actually having fun, or are they just sitting here being generous to me?
Is this like a hostage crisis? Blink three times if my game sucks.
So basic, from Jeff Beck, how you know when your game is not working is, you know, read the body language and tell when people are lying to you.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it boils down to.
Perfect. I think that's a good place to kind of move on, and let's talk about hardback. And for those people who may not have heard about hardback or may not know much about the game itself, Jeff, why don't you give us a quick description of it? Tell us a little bit about it.
Sure. So hardback, well, I guess we actually have to rewind, because hardback is actually the prequel to paperback. So if you don't know, paperback is a fantastic word deck building game designed by Tim Fowers here. Tim, you designed that in 2013? Is that when that came out?
Yeah.
And paperback, huge success, fantastic game. If you haven't tried it, do yourself a favor and go track it down at paperbackgame.com. Or there's an app, you can try it. It's a great game. Paperback is a game very similar to Dominion, but you're spelling words. So hardback, the prequel to paperback, is another deck-building word game, but in this case, this is more like Ascension or perhaps Star Realms meets a word game. So a little bit different, a different take on the game, but still a lot of fun.
It's like Incredible Hulk movies. Like, 3 years later, you can just make a whole new reboot and pretend the other one didn't exist.
With an entirely new actor.
Yeah.
I can't believe you just compared my game to The Incredible Hulk. I'm going to cry myself to sleep tonight.
No, I'm the Ang Lee Hulk. So mine's the one that everyone can get.
So this game is on Kickstarter now. You know, it's April 19th that we're talking. When did you first start working on hardback?
Way back, right as Word Domination, the campaign, was wrapping up, I demonstrated I had some design chops with regards to a word game. Tim and I were friends, so Tim approached me and said, hey, do you want to take a crack at a paperback expansion, is how it started. And I said, sure, that sounds like fun. Paperback is kind of an idol of mine, so, you know, the opportunity to help polish up an idol, who wouldn't go for that? That's a really weird mixed metaphor. But anyhow, I decided, yes, let's do that. So Tim and I started working together. He shared with me a Google Doc that had a whole bunch of ideas for potentials for the paperback expansion. I read those over, thought about them really hard, came back to Tim and said, those are all terrible. Let's try something completely different. So what I did take from Tim is he had a list of, here's all the unpolished edges of paperback. Here were all the concerns, the things that people found maybe a little frustrating with the game. And so I took those and said, okay, how do we design a game that really answers those issues? And what I came back with was a totally different game. And at, you know, at that point, Tim didn't know I was designing a totally different game. So I came back to him and said, hey, Tim, how do you feel about a different game as opposed to an expansion? And, you know, it took Tim a little while to kind of get his head around that, but it came out okay.
Yeah.
Very nice. So I have had the opportunity to play this game multiple times. One of the really great things that I love about hardback is the press your luck. For those people that aren't familiar with it, as you're playing, there are no card abilities that are going to allow you to draw more cards. You have your standard hand of five cards. And the only way that you can get longer words than that is by pressing your luck with a mechanic called ink, where you pull out a card off the top of your deck and you have to use that in your word. So tell me, how did you come up with that? Because really, in my mind, I mean, that's brilliant. And it added so much to the game. I played the game before in prototype status, before the ink was there and the pressure luck mechanic, and I played it after. And it just, it expanded the game so well. How did you come up with that?
A lot of it was just kind of a back and forth process. Like, we had a lot of agreement on some things and disagreement. And a big thing was like hand size and how big your hand could be and whatnot. And so that was on the table. And then there was this other factor of, because it was a points race, how do we kind of make it so someone can catch up? Because oftentimes in these engine building games, if someone has a better engine, there's really no way to catch them. I mean, sometimes you're going to have different kind of progression curves. Maybe you've got a deck that performs really well late game. But in general, there's this general catch-up problem. So we wanted to make that really dramatic ending. We wanted to make it so there was some kind of Hail Mary passes. That was the idea. Like, how do we get that? Those kind of came together. And I kind of just pushed back on Jeff. I said, well, this is what we want. We want some risk. We want some potential upside. And he came up with the ink thing. And it was like, and I think we were just like at the office and you were just like, well, what if it just, you know, what if you drew a card, but then you had to use it? And that was the amazing part about it is any other deck builder, another card is always good. Like, it's never going to hurt you. But if you're now married to this new letter and it has to be in your word, the decision space is totally different. You have stuff in your hand you want to use and you're hoping to still use it, but, you know, the wrong letter comes out, all of a sudden, two of the cards in your hand can't be used. And the whole thing really pivots on a dime like that. And the tension building up to that point where you're like, okay, what do I know about my deck? Because there's like deck awareness comes into it. Do I have any remover? Can I back out of this if this is a problem? And you have to just evaluate all that. And then you're like, where am I in the game? Am I behind? How much risk do I want to take? Or do I have a color I'm trying to match, a genre? There's all these factors that build into, I really think, is these push your luck moments in the game, whether to go, no go. So,
yeah, one thing I would add to that. So the game otherwise is very flexible. It's the only game I know of, word game wise, where you can turn any letter into a wild card. So it's like playing Scrabble, where you have an infinite number of blank tiles, right? So it's very, very flexible. You're going to be able to spell a word, no problem. So what this does is it adds a big fat constraint to that word, which is fun because you control how much constraint you want to deal with.
Yeah. And a lot of this was like side effects. Like a lot of this, we were just trying to solve a small subset of problems, but we were super happy when it like immediately it really opened the game up into yeah, we're really excited about it.
That's really cool. So I think that's kind of a good lead into the actual Kickstarter project. So let's talk about that a little bit. Looking at it right now, I think it's at a cool number. The Kickstarter project has 6 days to go. There are $202,002. So congratulations, wow. Tim and Jeff. I mean, that's incredible.
It really is.
I mean, I know, Tim, you've had a lot of successful games in the past, and Jeff, you had a great success in Word Domination, but think about it. I mean, you guys are kind of indie guys coming in, and you have raised over $200,000 on Kickstarter.
It's not, yeah, it's one of those things where you have to manage even how you see it in yourself. It's like, it's gratifying to know that there's that kind of response. Because if you let ego come into the equation, it can really disrupt your ability to bring the best product forward. So you really have to say, like, that's not me. They like a thing that I made that's not me, right? You have to kind of separate yourself from it. And I do that. And also now there are 5,500 people that I have to not disappoint when this shows up at their doorstep. Kickstarter, you're famous for something you haven't done yet. I mean, you've kind of done it because you've got to print and buy, but you know, you've got to print it. You've got to, you know, hope something doesn't go wrong with the printer. You've got to make sure everything is lined up correctly. There's still plenty of ways to screw it up, and you got to stay hungry. So, for me, it's just like, that's great. That means that I've got some expectations to meet. It also means that I can keep making games for a little bit longer.
All right, perfect. So taking a look at it, I think a lot of game designers maybe don't know that much about the type of work that you have to put in for this Kickstarter project. At this point in the project where, you know, you've raised this money, you know, you've got just under a week left to go, how much communication have you had with the manufacturer about this? Because as we can see, the stretch goals are still evolving, and it looks like, you know, there's talk of more things coming out. How much conversation have you had with that manufacturer, and how solid are you, you know, about your pricing with these stretch goals that are coming in?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, right now, what we're doing is we're just kind of getting ballpark figures. Like, we don't want to promise anything that's going to destroy any chance for us to make any kind of money. We don't want to promise anything that's going to limit our ability to actually fulfill this campaign. So we have to have a significant amount of dialogue about, okay, if we do Ink Meeples, what's that going to cost? If we do a player token that looks like X, what's that going to take? So there has to be a lot of dialogue. That said, we don't have it nailed down yet because, as you say, it is evolving. We're adding things. Things are changing. You know, this is still a moving target and probably, frankly, will be for a little while after the campaign ends because we need to kind of get it all sorted out and let everything land. And so it's mostly about a dialogue as opposed to just having everything nailed down.
Yeah. Generally, we're kind of constrained on like art. There's usually lots of art to wait for. So there's usually some time for us to kind of get our ducks in a row while that's getting ready. And there's a lot of things where I'll even add things after the campaign because I really just try to hit a really high quality bar with lots of like surprises and great things in the box. And a lot of those come out as stretch goals, but some of them might even come later. So a lot of it is just being really proud of what comes out. Sometimes it won't be as profitable as I wanted it to be, but since I'm trying to make a game that'll be around for a couple of years, I figure if these people backed me, and they get a little bit more game for their buck, that's fine.
Very nice. So every Kickstarter project is different, and they all have different challenges and different things that you kind of have to think about. But on this specific project, what is it that if you were to wake up tonight in a cold sweat at 3 a.m, what is that about this game? What on this Kickstarter, what has you the most worried, or what, you know, what is your biggest concern?
Tim, you should tell them about your dream you had last night.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So I was having a dream where yesterday we had some people that were canceling some pledges, and we couldn't really figure out why. On Burgle Bros, I had a day where a bunch of people canceled because there was a bad review on BGG. and a bunch of people canceled. So in my dream, I had read this big, you know, comment in the thread about three different reviews about how horrible hardback was. And, you know, people were leaving our project in droves. That, you know, that's probably a fear of mine, you know.
But a little insight into the Fowler's brain, leaving in droves meant that we were down to $194,000.
Yeah, that was the number. That was like, yeah, so.
Oh, you know. No. So kind of my last question before we move on to, you know, the grand finale, the best part of the podcast. Best advice that you could give to a game designer who is looking to start their own Kickstarter. Obviously, you have returning backers, you know, each of you from your own separate projects. But for your very first, your own Kickstarter project, what's the best advice you have for promoting it and getting new backers? What is, you know, the single best piece of advice you could share?
So in my experience, the most important thing you can do to get new backers is just have an amazing project, which is, you know, a lot harder than it sounds, and it doesn't sound that easy. But that's really what it comes down to, right? Because if you're a backer, first off, you have probably 200 different games to pick from. And that's just the games on Kickstarter. That doesn't even include all the games you have at your local friendly game store. And so if you're going to convince me as a backer to throw my money at a game that I'm not going to see for 8 months, and I can't even try it out for 8 months to see if I like it or not, that game just better sing and dance like unbelievably on the Kickstarter page for me to even consider throwing money at you. So that definitely happens. I've backed many games, but that's the level it takes. But if you do that, if you have a game that really stands out, it really shines, the theme works, the mechanics look fascinating, I'm really sold on what you're trying to accomplish, I'm going to back because that's a great thing. And I'll find you, right? I think there are a lot of people on Kickstarter that just look through, hey, what's new? You know, because it's kind of like it's the new Skylines shopping mall where you can just look through and say, hey, what's new today? What's fascinating? What's interesting? And if something catches their eye and it really is that standout product, they're going to back you and people are going to get excited about it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm on the same page. Like, that was the same advice. It's like unique voice. Because a lot of people see a lot, even in board game, like see a lot of stuff as commodity. They're like, okay, I have an area control game. I have a, you know, a deck builder. I have whatever. So you have to carve out a whole new spot on their shelf, basically. You have to be like, okay, it's not going to be apples to apples. You can't compare me to another. So I avoid both mechanics and themes that I feel are too close to another game. If it's another dungeon crawler, it better have a hook thematically and mechanically. Like, I probably overvalue innovation, but I think it's super important. And Kickstarter definitely rewards innovation. Just keeping a high bar and just understanding that you're not competing against other Kickstarters, right? It's easy to be better than a good number of Kickstarters if you just have your act together. You're going up against Days of Wonder. Do you have a game that you feel, you know, maybe you don't have all the art right now, but it can go up against the big boys and you have that kind of confidence behind it? So, I don't know. That's the rah-rah speech.
That was Tim Fowers officially challenging Days of Wonder.
Bring it on.
All right, so let's move on to kind of the finale, the, you know, the best part of the podcast, the game design challenge.
Yes.
Thank you guys for talking to me and answering the questions that I came up for you with on the current games, you know, and a little bit about yourselves. But I thought long and hard about this, and I wanted to bring up a game theme that does not have a lot out there. And so let me just present a scenario to you. So you're going into a dungeon. You have a mage, a tank, a berserker, and a healer. No, I'm kidding. I can only think of like 50 games that have that scenario.
That are on Kickstarter right now.
So have you guys seen Miss Congeniality?
Yes.
Yes.
So the theme that I'm going to present to you today, I'm genuinely curious what you guys come up with, is, you know, in the talent section, how you can make the glasses sing by using a little bit of water and making those glass glasses make noise.
Okay, you can spin your finger around the glass. Is that what you're talking about?
Exactly. Yeah. So, pitch me. What's a game you could come up with for that? Because I'm genuinely curious. I don't know if I'd want to play it, but I want to hear about it.
Wow.
Like, okay, like as a theme or as a mechanic?
That's up to you. I'll let you go from that. I feel like it's hard enough as it is. You can pick what's going to work best for your idea.
All right. So what's the most dramatic element of making a glass sing? And in my opinion, that's having the glass shatter because you hit the exact right note when you're spinning your finger on the glass. So I want a game where you have multiple glasses in front of you, and through some element of the game, you can get them to sing, but what you're ultimately trying to do is just get the perfect combination of on the individual glass so that one of them shatters. And you know, it's, and whoever can get the most glasses in front of them to shatter is the winner.
That is unique for sure. I like it.
Tim, you got anything for that?
No, I'm literally trying to figure out a game that involves making glasses sing. Like real glasses.
Channel your inner pageantry talent, now, Tim.
I'm trying to remember. Do these make specific pitches based on how much water is in them?
I think they make pitches based on the water and the size of the glass. I'm not an expert in this. That's just what I can remember.
I think you could have an app that is pitch finding, and you have players competing to be the first one to make a chord, two different notes consistently. So you got to get two. You got to find out what these notes are. Maybe it gives you clues. Maybe a kind of a warmer, colder kind of thing. And so you're adding and removing water from these glasses, and now you've got to get two of them going at the same time, to match this note. And the app tells you when a player has reached that. I don't know. Does that sound fun?
I could go for it as long as I'm not getting all of those pitches at the same time, and it's just maybe on a graph somewhere.
And if everyone does their two glasses perfectly, you end up playing like Moonlight Sonata or something.
Real-time glass singing competition. I like it. That is a game. That is an app I would download.
that may be better than Candy World. So I'll give you that.
Well, that's awesome, guys. I certainly gave you a challenge with that. Jeff, thank you for having me for guest host this podcast. It's truly been a pleasure having both of you on and talking a little bit more about hardback and just kind of game design in general. Any parting thoughts?
Absolutely. Thank you for being the guest host.
Yeah, Sam's awesome. He's local to us, and he actually helped a lot with the development of my game Fugitive, which will be a story for another day.
Sam, you want to give a little plug for what you got going on as a final thought?
Absolutely, and thank you for that. So I'm Sam. I do Sam Says Game Reviews. So you can check out my YouTube channel, Facebook page, Instagram page. I try to just get on there and, give you my thoughts on games. I go over what worked in a game, what didn't work in a game. Try to let you know in a specific game if you would like it or not. Depending on what type of gamer you are, what you would like, what you wouldn't like, if it would turn you on, what that would be. And I, of course, I did a how to play and kind of a playthrough with you guys for Hardback. And so I've been venturing into that area as well. But that's it. I'm Sam from Sam Says Game Reviews.
Well, that was Tim Fowers, the designer of Paperback, Burgle Bros, and Fugitive, along with Little Old Me, the creators of the new game Hardback, currently on Kickstarter. Also, a special thanks to Sam Aho, our guest host, who stepped in for me today. You've been listening to Your Tables on Fire. Check out our website for show notes and a link straight to Hardback. That's www.yourtablesonfire.com. You can also follow us on Twitter @TableFire. Speaking of which, we're on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and BoardGameGeek. Check us out on any of those sites and give us a review. We want to hear what you think. Well, until next time, go light it up.